Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You are Olympic champion Gabby Douglas. You should set goals because you will achieve those goals. I should not because I will fail at all goals. Nothing. I have no goal.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
The June pod has hit the wall, boys. Book collecting Harvard competition. We have arrived.
And SI's Pat Forty.
USC and UCLA are leaving. Bombshell. And then everybody's like, oh my gosh, it's all falling apart. Notre Dame has to join a conference. The ACC can't stay together. Well, guess what? Notre Dame didn't join a conference. The ACC, for now, is still together.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod, and we're going to go directly to our Washington Bureau. Ross Dellinger.
Correspondent, Washington correspondent.
Washington, you know, usually,
inside usually, the Beltway.
I have to go to the college football world, and this week they're coming to me, baby. They're coming to me. So they're all the dignitaries are up here in D.C.
Mr. Saban goes to Washington, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Lobbying. What are they lobbying for? What do you know that is happening here in the halls of power in the nation's capital?
Dan, there's one word to describe their lobbying efforts. It's your favorite word.
Guardrails.
In the world.
Guardrails.
They are lobbying for guardrails around athlete compensation, of course.
Regulations and restraint of trade. They are hitting the GOP up hard to take a stance of regulation and restraint of trade. What a country.
So, yeah, so it's a busy week. Some administrators already came into town Tuesday. And today, Wednesday, is SEC on the Hill, which is actually an annual thing that started 4 or 5 years ago. And they'll basically each SEC school's athletic director, football coach, and even in some cases school president, most of them are up here, and they'll meet with their delegations. And there's some one-off meetings too, like Nick Saban will meet with the House Majority Leader, Steve Scalise, and the folks at Mississippi State, and some of the collective folks will meet with some other senators that are outside their state. So, and they're all, you know, they're all lobbying for a federal standard for NIL. Really three things, right? It's the same three things that they've been lobbying for a couple years now. One, they want a preemption of state law in a NIL standard. Two, they want some kind of legal protection so they don't get sued around every corner and then lose. And then three, and this is kind of a newer one, they want athletes to be deemed students and not employees. So they're lobbying for any athlete compensation bill to include those three things. And then Wednesday's SEC on the Hill. Thursday, the University of Arizona is hosting a Future of College Athlete Summit. Bunch of panels. There's some NIL collective folks, executive directors of actual collectives that are going to be up here for that. Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, is attending that and going to be on a panel along with Greg Sankey, Jim Phillips of the ACC. Also going to be a part of that summit. So a busy couple days on the Hill in D.C. as college leaders try to kind of in a last gasp, you might say, before the presidential election cycle begins to get a bill moving in Congress.
What chances do you give them, Ross? Can they get a bill moving in that time frame?
I was talking to somebody on the somebody at a recent reception, and he's a school administrator, and I said, well, what do you guys feel like, how do you feel, you know, about tomorrow and about all these meetings? And he said, and I quote, well, we were on the plane over here and I looked at my fellow administrator and said, are we wasting our time? And I think it's probably the answer to that might just be Yes.
See, so that's, I guess, maybe this is the microcosm of college athletics, is a desire to get towards some sort of different solution and an inability to actually get there. And we can argue whether it's the right solution or not, but they can't even, first of all, agree on that solution and then B, get there. That's kind of where college athletics has been in one form or fashion for 70 years. You want to go back to amateurism and Walter Byers and everything else. But this is the latest, and probably, one of the reasons you're covering this is because it's the most urgent iteration of it, because there's so many legal challenges coming that if this further splinters and becomes less the domain of the college establishment, then obviously less control over it, less control over where the money goes, and more repercussions for a system that hasn't been able to govern itself.
And
yeah, I go ahead.
No, I was just going to add one more thing, Dan. Just I wrote about it today, is they're going to use, the California state revenue sharing bill that just passed through the assembly, still has to pass through the state Senate in California before it's law, which a lot of people give, long odds to that happening. But they're going to use that with lawmakers as kind of a crisis, that they believe that if California does pass this, and its implementation date, by the way, is January, this coming January, that it will set off a string of state laws around the country, just like NIL did. And they're also going to use these court cases, specifically the House case out in California, which potentially the NCAA could be on the hook for billions with a B of dollars in back NIL pay. They're going to use that, and they're going to use these varying state laws, these new state laws that I wrote about last week in the SEC footprint, that are all very different and all that stuff.
I think the devil is in the details here, and we're going to find out what they are. I have no idea. I've yet to, again, have anyone clearly explain to me where the problem is. I've had people try, but then they've never convinced me that there's this huge problem with the free market. It's more our coach doesn't like that the world's changed around him, or they're hyper competitive and they can't stand any possible recruiting disadvantage that they can foresee. Or is this what we want to be? One of those kind of philosophical arguments. So I don't know, see what they come up with. We'll see if anyone passes it. We have I will not out anybody, but we do have actual members of Congress who listen to this podcast. No kidding. In both chambers, trying to use my lean back on my government education here.
How'd you do
upper
it,
chamber?
Civics?
Is it the upper chamber and lower? Whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Which one did they all climb the walls of and all that? No, I think that's the same building. Anyway.
Yeah.
There we are. And those guys have told me not much chance, but hey, we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Our College Football Inquirer political leaders who listen can let us know. Keep us updated on how this goes. All right. Other big story, the Pac-12 conference per John Canzano out of Portland, johncanzano.com. He's got a radio show. He's a big, he and John Wilner are kind of the Pac-12 media in many ways on this stuff. He is reporting that the Pac-12 conference members, the remaining 10, have finalized the terms of their grant of rights per a source. It includes a variety of elements that all 10 schools needed to agree on, and it appears they have. Among the items, grant of rights includes sponsorship of the Pac-12 centralized versus what's left for campuses to sell, what set of rights the conferences can sell, and how revenue will be split among the 10 members. Also, postseason incentives are out there. So it appears that the they are ready to sign, and it's just a matter of getting this thing over the finish line if they can get the right TV deal to do it. So it's going to come down completely to TV money, I guess.
Yeah, and this is actually when we were out in Phoenix. So right out a month ago, I'd first heard of this, that they had all, you know, verbally agreed to a grant of rights. And it's got a merit-based revenue sharing, kind of like the ACC just did. However, it's a verbal agreement, just like the alliance was a verbal agreement. I think that, as you mentioned, they need to see a good enough, satisfactory, or suitable TV deal in order to make a verbal agreement a binding, you know, documented deal. And obviously it's a good sign for the Pac-12 that all the schools have kind of hopped on board verbally to agree to something and they finalize these details. But I don't really know if that was ever in question. The question still remains, is the TV deal going to be good enough to keep them all together, you know, and get them to sign?
Yeah, so this sounds to me, and correct me if I'm in misinterpreting it, that they have an agreement in principle that they would like to stay together and a framework for how to do it. But if the TV deal doesn't turn out to be good, that they can just walk away and say, yeah, never mind. So it's a deal that's not quite fully binding yet because we don't know the terms.
At least it's the Pac-12 leaking a story, not the Big 12 leaking a story. About
True.
It's a very good point. Very True. Good point.
Hey, because I, you know, every day it's another, these guys are gone, all that.
Oh, yeah.
I think the question is, I actually think this is not binding. This is, yeah, the Alliance 2.0, whatever you want to call it. It is important, though, that there is a desire to stay together and an interest and agreed upon on everything else, because the money may not have to be equal. It can be 90, like, it makes it harder for someone to splinter if they're not mad about anything else.
Right.
And there is, you can say, well, there's going to be a little more TV revenue in the Big 12. We don't expect it to be dramatic. It's not like double or even 50% more. At least that's, I don't think, right? And so, like, yeah, you know, you can sit there and say, hey, man, we're Colorado. We're going to go back. And then you go, we're going to lose access to, you know, the state of California where we get so many of our regular students. Or like, there's other considerations. So someone's kind of got to go to you and be like, look, man, like UCLA, I don't think they ever wanted to leave the Pac-12. It was like we're bankrupt. Our athletic department's bankrupt. We got to do this.
Well, and our partner's leaving, you know, too.
Our partner's leaving.
Yeah.
We're bankrupt, but we're going to take the hits. We're going to have remember they had the hearings. What do you owe Cal? What are you going to do for this? And you know what? Is it really that good if UCLA is not playing up in the Bay Area? Like, it's the UC system. And there's a lot of negatives that go along to the move. There's positives, but you better have a real financial reason. So I just wonder if this isn't, you know, if this is, yeah, the money's got to be better, but they're not leaving if it's $5 more.
No, they're not. And that's, you know, throughout this whole thing, I think there's been so many shocks to the system and a lot of hubris, brinksmanship, misinformation that you do kind of lose sight of the fact that, yeah, these are massive decisions that are not going to be made on a marginal amount of money. You know, nobody is going to uproot everything they've got in place unless they're wildly dissatisfied. And this seems to make fairly clear that everybody currently in the Pac-12 is not wildly dissatisfied. Not like, hey, we're cutting and running for we're not making a lateral move here for no more money. We're, you know, the schools want to be there. And to Dan's point, that's probably the most important thing. And I do think there's an element when these things come along of cooler heads prevailing, more rational thought. The shocks to the system that come when it's Texas, Oklahoma, when it's USC, UCLA. And by the way, I think the golf writers out there yesterday with the Live PGA stuff got their UCLA, USC moment Like, what the hell just happened?
Well, I was one of them.
Yeah. Like, bombshell you did not see coming in the slightest. Anyway.
Not Tuesday.
Not this soon. Yeah.
I kind of thought maybe in a year or two, but it was like, whoa.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, like if you go back to last summer, USC and UCLA are leaving, bombshell. And then everybody's like, oh my gosh, it's all falling apart. Notre Dame has to join a conference. The ACC can't stay together. Well, guess what? Notre Dame didn't join a conference. The ACC, for now, is still together. The Pac-12 did not splinter and fall into the ocean. For now. We will see if they get this to the finish line, but I think this is an indication that when you step back and actually start getting people together to analyze the rational reasons for yes or no, there's a lot more reasons for staying intact right now for the Pac-12.
Seems like you're walking on a plank of naivete to say conference realignment won't happen. It's like we've been trained to expect the absurd.
Well, sure. And it's not June 30th when stuff starts happening.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's like, because you sit there and go, it doesn't really make any sense. Why would they do that? Especially right now, if the money comes in at 90% or 85%, why in the world does these schools in the West, Colorado or Arizona, like they're not going to not be appealing in a couple years.
Right.
It's not like you're okay. Listen, Cincinnati, you got one shot. You know, or you like West Virginia had to jump to the Big 12 because they had no options. Like.
Right.
Play this out. See how the playoff works. Be in contention for a playoff spot late in the season. None of these programs are, you know, like you. I don't know anybody that can tell me you're going to be better off in the Big 12 competitively, fit wise. You know, even financially, maybe. But you're going to spend a lot more money.
Yep.
And you know, you're selling your fans on games they're not used to seeing. You're in places you don't want to be. Your non-recruiting area, you know, it's sort of like, what are we doing? Like, you're not better off just adding SMU and San Diego State and just doing this? And so they may do it, but I just don't know why.
Yeah. You mentioned San Diego State, and I wonder about the timing of this particular leak. You know, San Diego State's a little bit on a clock in terms of how much it would cost them to exit the Mountain West and maybe, this is a time to indicate, you know, we're close. We're working on getting this to happen so in a way that would be beneficial for them. I don't know that for sure, but I just wonder, since the Pac-12 has leaked nothing and let everyone else do all the leaking, this is kind of an interesting development.
They need an associate commissioner for leaking. They're way behind.
Need better better TV deal, and an associate commissioner for leaking.
They got one at the Big 12. You can bet your life on that.
Damn straight. May not say that on the business card, but
may not be true what they're leaking. But you know, it's more aspirational than factual. But hey, all right. Well, we'll continue to monitor.
Ongoing saga.
Ongoing saga out west.
Yes.
There had been much discussion, worries even, including on this podcast, which was, you know, is built on overreacting to nothing, about the Clemson football recruiting. They're getting beat in state for linemen by South Carolina. They weren't signing many players. They didn't like the transfer portal, all this different stuff. Clemson is an unusual place. They held one weekend this month for official visits. They wanted everyone to come together June 2nd to 4th. That'd be the only time you can come to an official visit. Again, like most schools will just, that ain't how they're doing it. They'll do some like that, but not, you either come now or you're not really into us, right? It's the old, I don't know if they still have the policy of if you commit, you can't take another visit. And if you do, we'll dump you. I don't really know how applicable that is.
Right.
But they had their weekend, and since then, they have landed two five-star players, linebacker Sammy Brown and wide receiver Bryant Wesco, and another top 100 receiver in TJ Moore. And they are believed to be on the verge of a whole bunch of other guys who were on this apparently great weekend up there in Clemson. There's like seven more guys that could be leaning or ready to pop or who knows what. And all of a sudden, Clemson's recruiting class is snugly back in the top 10. And maybe it's not going to be Georgia or Alabama level, but panic has waned a little bit up there in the mountains.
Pat?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a nice bounce back, I guess, for Clemson here. They're in the Rivals top 10 for this recruiting class. And as you said, there may be more to come out of this big recruiting weekend, but they've got three whoppers right now. And it's funny. I mean, you know, I understand the philosophy, whether it's you're either with us or you're not with us, but even more than that, it's just getting as many of these guys together at one place at one time and have them start talking like, yeah, hey, this would be fun if we went here, man. Let's all do this together. That kind of thing can go a long way. I remember, again, falling back on my own experience, my daughter visited Stanford with, I think, six other girls. They all committed 2 days later. If you get a group and it clicks and that's the place they want to be, you can really get some big momentum. So, you know, I mean, Clemson has so much to offer that they should be a perennial top 10, at least, recruiting place, I would think. We'll see, again, a lot of staff turnover. We'll see if they can maintain the product on the field, but they should be able to maintain the talent pipeline for now, at least until there's some reason to think that you can't go there and compete for a championship.
You know, I was in Clemson a month or two ago, and I still got some audio on my recorder. I got to go back with Dabo Swinney, but we got deep into NIL, and you know, his approach to NIL is obviously different, just like his approach to recruiting is different than most coaches. And I remember him saying something like, NIL has been great for us because we're not using it like everybody else is that we're competing against. And you can take that with a grain of salt, but there is something maybe to be said for...
What's he mean by that?
I think that he means that they are, I mean, to put it blunt, and he didn't say this, but this is me kind of assuming it, that they just aren't throwing around big bags of cash to athletes to come there. They're not getting into bidding wars.
And so it's been like good that. For them because of that, because they're avoiding it.
He said, yeah, his take was, we're basically doing something different. And I think we talked about this in the pod before about like, you know, how schools are going, if the transaction can't be all about, you know, can't be all about the money transaction, that it has to be about other things in the relationship and all that stuff. You know, that's the way he says, again, you could take it with a grain of salt, but that's the way he says they're approaching it. And, you know, it probably does, pay, so to speak, to be different these days, and it's worked for them in regular kind of recruiting before NIL, and maybe it's working now. But I do need to go back and look at some of the things he said to me about NIL, because it was pretty interesting. And you know, that said, actually, Clemson's athletic director is supposed to be up here, Graham Neff in DC, and so is their executive director of their NIL collective, supposed to be up here in DC as well this week. So don't think that what Dabo says means that they are not involved in NIL at all. But, you know, he says they're doing it differently than their competitors.
Well, like, they've always done things different, and he's always been a different type of coach, and it certainly works. you know, people are talking that they slip a little bit. They still won two titles, and you guys, your team didn't. It's pretty much it. I mean, slip from what? Georgia and Alabama? Maybe not even Alabama.
Right.
So, and he's a passion guy. I mean, he is a motivator. He is a connecting guy. He's a personable guy. He's a guy of faith and that type of, that's his, he is who he is. You don't walk away talking to Dabo Swinney and go, who, I'm not sure what this guy's all about. You may be like, no one could be that upbeat and positive all the time, even when he's going into his complaints. So I don't doubt it, man. You get a nice weekend up there, they get it done. So don't bury the Tigers yet. We will we'll wait on that one. All right, interesting story here, at least to me. The Florida Gators from the legendary 2006 to 2009 teams. They won a couple titles. They had Tim Tebow, they had Urban Meyer, they had Aaron Hernandez, they had Brandon Spikes, Cam Newton was there, Percy Harvin, the Pouncey Twins. 41 players were arrested at one time or another from that 2008 team. A lot going on. They're getting their own Netflix show on the Untold series. Now, I previously did a Netflix on Aaron Hernandez. We talked about the Gators a lot. I am not involved with this, but they are doing a Netflix deal on the 2006 to 2009 Gators. Scale of 1 to 10, Pat, how excited are you for, will you make sure someone types in your Netflix password to watch this? Make sure there's no way you know it. There's no way you know it.
Well, that's 100% correct. You're accurate there. Okay. I have no idea what it is. Okay. So I will plead guilty to that.
Trisha, do we have Netflix? Text the family. Do we have Netflix? Oh, Dad. Yeah. Dad, it's 40 family! ! That's it.
The 40 right. kids who don't even live in the 40 main household, they don't even live probably there. Know it no. before the.
Brooke will be trying to get you that log in from Peru, some jungle in Peru, or work for the Peace Corps. Just so
that's
we can
why
watch
we have a family group text so that I can figure out what the damn passwords are. I'm still paying the cell phone bills. They better tell me what the password is.
Yeah.
My interest level is a 5.5, not higher than that. A couple of things here. First off, if this, I can't say empirically this is the same show, but I think it probably is. It's somebody who was involved in this reached out to me and talked to me probably for an hour about this.
On camera? Are you going to be on the show?
No, not on camera. My sense is that this is going to be, should I use the word? Term sports washing of the Gator tenure there. I could think, be. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going
well, it's
to be a
end
large
with a positivity. I mean, we know this per USA Today, former Gator linebacker Brandon Seiler is involved. Or no, he did the Instagram post. I don't know. Maybe not. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I don't know. He may not be involved.
I the sense was that they were not very interested in the Hernandez and other elements of what the downsides, so to speak.
Nobody called me. I'll tell you that. Nobody called me.
Well,
we have all,
they
we have all
to me,
sorts
but they
of extra
didn't
stuff.
Want me on camera. Yeah, they didn't want me on camera. And I do know some of the people they did want on camera, and I think they wanted them for a reason, because I think this is going to be a largely positive Urban Meyer approved documentary. And I will say, look, those were fascinating times and fascinating teams. There was a lot of crap that went on, but boy, they were really an interesting bunch. They played very entertainingly. Tebow was an absolute force of personality. I mean, it's kind of hard to even state how big a deal he was from a college football standpoint, especially because there was no carryover from the NFL. But It'll be interesting. I just think my anticipation is that this is going to be a it's going to be one point of view on that time for football.
Yeah. Well, boy, they could do. I want the Dan Mullen
Florida documentary. I want the McIlwain, end of the McIlwain shark photo, Florida. Actually, they did make a documentary about the shark photo, didn't they? Didn't they interview, Barstool, they tracked down the guy?
No, I think Barstool tracked
Barstool
him down.
Barstool did. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it was not Jim McIlwain. And then I think they brought that guy to meet him in like Central Michigan or something, didn't they?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, if I were McIlwain, I would happily take the meeting because then it would at least definitively prove it wasn't me.
It's not him.
Yeah.
But the point is, man, since Spurrier,
there was a picture
hung it up
of
at Florida,
a guy who looked like
something.
Jim McIlwain naked hugging a shark. Right. Yeah. That was the just for those who forgot.
Yeah, unfamiliar with
and McIlwain did not take it well. He just should have laughed. And instead he protested.
He should have played into it and he did the opposite at like SEC Media Day. He was really angry and furious. And ultimately led to his downfall. No, not really. But he did have a downfall. I mean,
so
the point is, boring teams. Since Spurrier hung it up, but that Florida football has been something dramatic.
Oh yeah. Well, I think I hope this is good because they really were fascinating teams, and you could tell the positives and the negatives, and have an outrageously good documentary. The documentary business is too often about, they're almost as told to books now. They're autobiographies, not documentaries. Right. They're auto documentaries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and as you know, it's and like it, the Jordan rules or what they call the Jordan one, whatever the Michael Jordan one was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like that was kind of the downfall of sports documentaries. I will see, but gave Jordan the Last Dance. That's it.
They gave Jordan
all the power because. Yeah. You couldn't make it without Michael Jordan. And because it was Michael Jordan, it was okay. It was a good, I mean, it was good, but it was like, okay, we're going to bend the rule here and just give up control because we get Jordan. And it was a huge success because no one had anything to watch.
Yeah. It was
very good. It's very good. It was fun. Yeah. But it's not really the best way to do it. A great documentary is told with some level of fairness and some level of, it's just outside perspective. So I don't know anything about this, but, you know, I know when we were doing the Hernandez one, there was a lot of pressure on us to try to bring in people just because like certain people wouldn't do an interview unless you gave them a measure of control or stuff. And I'd be like, this person's just going to lie anyway. Why do we want that?
Right.
You know, I was trying to, we're trying to fight the good fight. And sometimes they're, you know, it's like, yeah, but you need that person talking. So like you need Urban Meyer in this. Well, how do you get Urban Meyer to do this? If Urban's not dumb, he's not gonna be like, well, is this going to be fair and balanced? Or am I going to be able to tip the scale and call it fair and balanced?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I hope
Urban's
good.
Idea of fair and balanced might not be fair and balanced.
I always like the one, particularly the first one on the U and the U2. Which they called it, by Billy Corbin down in, he's a great documentarian, his Cocaine Cowboys and his movie Screwball about the Balco thing is so good. The documentary Screwball, he uses like these child actors. It's fantastic. He's a great doc. He's a real documentarian, not like me, who's like, you know, like don't know. He's really good. And he's a huge Kane fan, like over the top. Like, there's no question, no good perspective, but when he did the U, it was like, yeah, we were completely out of control. And that's what I liked. So he leaned into the craziness because he liked it. Bible. I was doing Bible studies with, you know, Urban Meyer and his Bible studies with Hernandez. I'm like, well, I don't know what part of the Bible you were studying, but it was the wrong one.
Yeah.
That wasn't the book, you know, it's a lot in there. And that wasn't, I don't know what one you were going for, but you know, so hopefully, because other than the Gators, what college football team would you like to see one on, or what college football doc would you like to see, you know,
it's a done great right. question there. Yeah. Great question there. Go ahead.
Let's go. I always say that Florida
There's three teams. Florida, Auburn, and LSU are like the most dysfunctional, up and down, roller coaster, drama-filled college football programs in America. So either Auburn and or LSU would be fascinating to go back for an era, whether it's like the Ed Orgeron like roller coaster at LSU, whether it's the same with Chizik at Auburn, I think would be interesting. Tuberville's last like couple years, especially in hindsight now with him as a state senator. US all senator. Of that, either would be really fascinating.
Washington correspondent. He is a U.S. senator, not a state senator.
U.S. senator. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
Put some respect on Tommy T's name.
I know.
Do we have to? I would. Well, there's been some work done on like the Barry Switzer Oklahoma days. Some of which is very good. But I mean, because it was wild there. And he was such a character, you know, I mean, the way he could relate and recruit was incredible. His whole story and his personality. And then the way they played, I mean, I loved wishbone football, and they were so fun to watch playing what was, you know, kind of an old school hide bound, but it was athletic. It was pitching the ball. There was, you know, sleight of hand. It was really fun. I'd like to see something going back 70s, 80s. Oklahoma would be my choice.
And of course,
I felt like the best one on Oklahoma was the one on Marcus Dupree, the best that never was.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the greatest of the 30 for 30s they ever did.
Yeah.
And again, because it's just obviously Marcus is involved, but at this point he doesn't have a lot of, like, he's not trying to sanitize it too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just total mayhem, and it's a window into a really like crazy time.
Yeah.
And Switzer's in that. I mean, you know, they drop off a mobile home, you know, and the home's still there, obviously. I guess it's mobile. Like, just the whole thing was so good. And that kind of captured that era. I almost feel like that's the way to do it. You know, like almost through a side player or some, you know, Tebow himself would be fascinating. Mm-hmm. In everything that he encompassed. Certainly Cam Newton, right? The enormous amount of Terrell Pryor. We've talked about that one game, that West Virginia Pitt game where Pitt, this bad Pitt team, it upsets West Virginia, and the swinging door matter of that, right? Like, Ohio State gets to go to the title game, and then Rich Rod leaves, and it ends up being the downfall of Michigan, and Terrell Pryor ends up going to Ohio State, and that ends up being the downfall sort of Tressel, and like all the different things that went on out of that whole bit. I don't know, some of those kind of things.
Yeah, that's it. Just that got me thinking. Hartley Dykes, who was from Bay City, Texas, and went to Oklahoma State and was like the number one recruit in the country and ended up getting four Southwest Conference schools on probation at once for their recruitment of him. That was a good one. He helped blow up the Southwest Conference.
All bad. I don't know. Got any ideas? Yes. I'll make another documentary, but I doubt it because I'm not going to make it too soft. Couple items here. Let's see. We had University of Texas. You know, it's just not nice enough there at their football facility. They just spent $7 million remodeling their locker room.
Hmm.
I'm guessing that is not the guardrail that will be mentioned on Capitol Hill.
I honestly seem to remember Tom Herman remodeling the locker room in 2016. So I guess like 7 years later, it's hopelessly out of date.
Apparently. This thing is, I don't really know. I mean, it's super nice. It's very modern looking. I don't know if this is my idea of a locker room. I don't know. Not really matter. It's very metallic. Lots of air conditioning. They believe they have enough ventilation so that it won't smell. I don't know if you can have a sort of. There's the Longhorn logo is everywhere. Each locker cost, was it $8,700 or $7,800? Or no, each locker costs $8,700.
Money well spent. Now, if you asked each player, you can have one of two things. $8,700 of cash, or in $8,700 locker to replace the locker that we renovated 6 years ago. I wonder what they would say.
But it's out of control now.
We
need federal legislation to come in because things are out of control. It was totally fine when the contractors were getting paid. I mean, some of this stuff, each locker has its own 37-inch television.
Mm-hmm.
37-inch.
That's pretty big. Well, I'm looking at a television now. I don't know. I guess it's about 30 inches, the one in my bedroom. Damn.
Here we go. April 14th, 2017. Actually, April 7th, 2017, Tom Herman taking a sledgehammer to help start the demolition of the outdated locker room so they can build the new one. And then we've got pictures from a week later. New lockers are unfreaking believable. Each locker has a 43-inch monitor instead of a nameplate. Each locker reportedly cost $10,500. This was 2017. 6 years later, got to redo it. Got to do the whole thing over.
Well, I mean, they're minimalist, 37-inch screen. How will these guys even see? $7 million 6 years later.
6 years later.
And we're in Congress.
Yeah.
Saying this could be, things might get out of control.
At a certain point, and I think it's already started to happen. You've seen some ADs actually going publicly to say this, is money, all this money that gets spent because college athletic departments, at least at the top, highest level, want to break even. They need to break even at the end of the day. So they are spending all this money that they get in. At some point, you got to like put the money off to the side in an account and prepare to pay your players a salary. And you've seen some player or some ADs actually kind of hint at that publicly. And I think that's starting to happen, but if you're an AD, probably a good idea to start putting some money aside in some way in preparation for what's coming down the pipe.
Tom Herman, April 15th, 2017. On the lockers. It says from a facility standpoint, there will be no reason for a recruit to want to go somewhere else. Well, he got fired. Next guy's so far doing a middling job. So
I would just spend the money on the new, on more Johnny Walker Blue for the recruit's dad. That's what I would do.
Seemed to work pretty well last year.
I mean, again, I don't even know what to say about this kind of thing, except this is how it goes. A small bit of house cleaning. We mentioned the Trent Dilfer story the other day.
Yeah.
I was amiss in not saying it was written by Andy Whitry of On3 Sports. He's their NIL sports business reporter. Does a very good job at Andy Whitry, WITTRY, if you want to follow him on Twitter. But I usually like to give credit where I'm getting my stuff, and I forgot that one. So
yeah, that wasn't well sourced quote from Dilfer out there, and it never said where
Dilfer
the
took
from.
The quote. Yeah, to defend us, but we don't really deserve too much defense.
They've done a good job lately. They've reported on some of this EA Sports stuff. And I think the latest thing is the College Football Players Association, which is run by a man named Jason Stahl out of Minnesota, is encouraging players to boycott participation in the EA video game until a more fair compensation can be agreed to, can be reached. It's interesting. There were some quotes from players down at the NIL Summit.
$500 they're getting now, right?
Right. Yeah, like reportedly $500 for each player. And we've talked about it on the show before, how that seems like a fairly small number. And so Jason Stahl and them are, yeah, they're encouraging players to kind of join their association and boycott the game. And I tweeted some of this out. And On3 has had some stories about this the last couple of days. But I tweeted out Jason's newsletter that that got into this issue this Wednesday morning. And it was interesting to see the response. Now, take it again with a grain of salt because it's Twitter. But the response was very clear. It was like 95-5 on we don't care. Give us the damn game. We don't care if they're fake players like they were in the past. We don't care about the name on the back of the jersey. We care about the name on the front of the jersey. Just give us the game. And it's really interesting. So, and I was talking to somebody about this after all the responses to saying, like, will a boycott mean anything? Because fans don't seem to care about, literally, they just want the game and want to play with the logos and want to play with the colors. So I just found it an interesting issue.
First off, other than a handful of players, no one knows the difference between these players. Maybe not a handful, but 20, 30 guys.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I want
50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
50, maybe. Yeah, that maybe because different people in different spots.
Yeah.
Right. I want Caleb Williams to be the USC quarterback. Well, that's okay. Fine. I want, I don't know, Blake Corum to be the Michigan running back. But if he's not, I want Michigan Stadium. I want it to snow during the Ohio State. You know, all the stuff that makes these things great. This isn't, I need Mahomes. I need Allen. I need this. So, and look, it is 500. It's not much. And I'm not here. I have no idea how much EA Sports makes off this thing. But a college football team has like 125 players on it. If you're going to pay them all.
Yeah.
There's 130 something teams, you know, 500, it's like $8 or $9 million, might be $9 million. So it's not like, it sounds like nothing, but there's a lot of players out there. Is $9 million a lot for EA Sports' college game? Probably not. They could probably up it, but like to how much, right?
Right. And that's, look, I think fans in general, like, will have a general level of sympathy for and support for the players. Like, oh yeah, they should get paid. And then it's like, well, wait a minute, they're going to boycott and we're not going to have the game? Screw that. Moderate level of sympathy for them does not override their desire to have a game to play. And so if it comes down to a choice, the public's going to say, give them nothing then and give us the game.
Yeah. Big development for me personally, maybe you guys too. The programmers, the developers at Apple, if you have an iPhone, you know, they have the autocorrect function. And I don't know about you, but more often than not, a certain word I often am texting turns to ducking. Like I am ducking under. Yeah, yeah, I am often ducking under things, I guess. And then you go, this text doesn't make any sense because I don't. How much ducking are you doing? Is this like the animal, the duck? Anyway, they're going to get rid of that autocorrect function. Apparently, you can swear on your iPhone.
Hallelujah.
And I'm happy about it. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. No longer the ducking terrible throw by Russell Wilson that I'm texting somebody about.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Good.
What there's a ducking smog that has infiltrated my city here in D.C. That's the thing. All college football world is up in D.C. and suddenly we can't see beyond a half a mile up here and we can't breathe the air outside.
Bringing the smoke. I think actually this will be big for college football fans. Like, what is our ducking defensive coordinator doing?
Exactly.
Yeah. Going zero coverage on that. Like, what are we, you know, right? Our head coach is a ducking idiot. This
is a huge breakthrough for this game day Saturday sports viewing and reacting.
Good news for all of us. Yeah. All of us out there. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I didn't ever correct to something else like clucking.
It's just such a dumb word. How often are you using the word ducking?
Clucking.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, I was ducking under that branch. Like, maybe once a year you would actually use the word ducking. Maybe. It's just such a random word. No, I didn't mean ducking.
Could have done chucking.
If you, work for Ducks ducking. Unlimited, you know, Ducks
chucking
Unlimited
would be
or something,
better.
You
might. Yes. Just, or just literally have a change to expletive if you're all offended, Apple developers. No, I'm not. There's some data out there that, like, the word ducking is no longer used, right?
It's, that is, they've been stubbornly slow to do that. I mean, people have been complaining about this for years, myself prominently included. So, not that we're encouraging gratuitous swearing out there for our younger listeners.
No.
Be better than us. Mm-hmm. Be better. If there's anything you should aspire to, it's to be better than me. Because ever tell you when I interviewed Gabby Douglas, the gymnast, and she had this, to talk to her, you had to do, she had some promotion going with something, right? You know how these things work.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know, Visa or something. Let's just say it's Visa. Yeah. And it was the importance of setting goals or something like that. So, and I did not want to talk to her about this. I had a specific question I wanted to ask her. There was a big back and forth because I'm like, I'm not asking her about this, whatever. They're like,
of course, yeah.
You have to. I'm like, I'll ask it, but I'm not using it, all this stuff. It's this big to do it was a big back and forth. So I'm like, fine. So we sit down and she was going to ask me, she goes, do you set goals for yourself? And of course the answer is like, you know, if you're like the morning show host, you're like, of course. And I wish I did better. I'm like, no. And she's like, when she's stunned because I'm not playing along, and Gabby Douglas is great, but she's like, so she starts laughing. She's like, why not? I'm like, it's just one more chance to fail. Like, what, you are Olympic champion Gabby Douglas, you should set goals because you will achieve those goals. I should not, because I will fail at all goals. Nothing. I have no goal.
My goal is to retain my job through the end of today. We'll try again tomorrow.
Gabby and I got along great. The PR woman was ready to kill me.
Oh, yeah. My
goal was to not get murdered by whoever that person was.
There you go. So. When I got the Harbaugh stuff about mowing the lawn, right. That was contingent on asking him about, you know, skill trades. And,
but you got something,
technical
skill, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you guys got to think through their little game, right? And
yeah,
think it out.
Yeah, you just got, you got to outsmart the PR person.
Yeah. So usually we do not, but occasionally. All right. Update on Pat. You asked an important question the other day. How in the world did Harvard win the national championship of book collection?
Yes.
What is this? Shouldn't whoever's got the biggest library, right? Should just automatically win. This should not seem be that hard. Well, we have a answer. The book collection title was won by a single student, Daria Rose Evdokimova. Okay. She is attends Harvard. She is a, someone who, her parents or herself, she immigrated from Russia herself and then attended Harvard. And so she won the national championship in book collection. So the way that she won it is she had the entire collection of epic athletes. All 10
God. No. Oh, my God. John, you might need to jump this part.
I had to do the joke. They were very impressed with the Mahomes and the Steph Curry.
Oh, my God.
No. That wasn't it. Some kid from Yale got that. Got him in second. No. Yeah. How they win. So how do you win the book collection? Okay, because this is a weird thing, right? Yeah. So this is her answer. Could you give a brief description of your collection? And she says, she goes, my collection focuses on the publishing house Artist Publishers, the first and only U.S.-based publishing house, which focused on Russian and Soviet literature. The majority of my collection consists of artist editions of works by, and she names two people, who were born in St. Petersburg and had to get exiled to the U.S. for political reasons, much like her. She has a personal collection and goes on and on longer than a book.
Okay.
It's not that interesting, but that's how you do it.
That's how you do it. And like,
you have to have like some, I got all the books from this one publisher about this. I don't know.
You enter your little collection, I guess, and send some like board of panel of librarians or something says, oh yeah, you're the winner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's apparently it. She said these books provided a necessary bridge that helps connect two parts of my identity. The sides that are in the political context are frequently positioned as adversarial instead of disjointed. Stuff. I don't know. It's Harvard stuff. No wonder they see anyone from UMass winning this thing.
Epic athletes finished up the track in this one.
The June pod has hit the wall, boys. Book collecting Harvard competition.
I mean,
we have arrived.
All right. Finally, stupid criminals. Stupid criminal division. Let's get out of here. underage man in Michigan was arrested recently. He had gone to a bar. And the bouncer would not let him in because he had a fake ID. He was only 20 and he had a fake ID, and the doorman said, I'm not going to let you in, the bar because I think this ID is fake. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, I know none of our listeners, but there are many fake IDs romping around campus, through the years. So he was going to be able to walk away. There wasn't going to be a police incident for the fake ID, except he then tried to bribe the doorman with a small amount of cocaine.
Oh,
well,
brilliant.
The suspect then offered the security man a small plastic bag with a white substance in it. This is sort of an apology for the fake ID. Sergeant Timothy Brown. The police came over. They also found he was carrying a rolled up dollar bill with suspected residue on it, other things. He ended up getting booked for the cocaine. So my question for you, I'll start with you, Pat, is this apology coke, the apology cocaine, is that a nice gesture, or did he deserve to get...
I mean, you know, if that's what he's got, and you know, you go with what you got, right?
If whatever's on your person, including cocaine.
The only gift I have for you is some coke.
Yeah. I mean, you can go out to your car and try to scrape up some change under the the seat or whatever and offer him that. Or you can give him the coke in your pocket and the dollar bill, maybe. That would be a nice, you know, give him the accessory to use with the gift. Probably not wise, and yes, might lead you to end up being mentioned on the podcast here, but I guess the fake ID was that bad that they just outed him right then and there. I mean, I had like one in college that was a limousine license that said I was 27. It was really bad, but it worked for like over a year. I don't know how.
So. A limousine license. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You kind of look like a limo driver. Pull that.
Maybe so. I was like, again, I was like 19, said I was 27. It was not close.
Ross, if you're busted for a fake ID and you've put this poor doorman out and had to, you know, inconvenience the guy. The guy's trying to make a living, right? He's just working. Nobody, you know, he's working his night. He's got enough hassles. Is a little bump of coke a fair? I'm sorry.
A little bump of coke.
I don't know. It's a small bag, they said. It wasn't like he gave him a kilo and he could resell. Give me the re-up.
Kilo would be a very grand apology.
Yes, a re-up. Yes. So, yes. I mean, it's just like, it's a little something for your troubles. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah. Well, like you said, whatever's on your person, you know, that's what you got on your person. That's what happens, I guess. Yeah, I'm for that. What, Pat? Chime in. What you got?
No, I think we should ask Sean, who has worked, I believe, in bar enforcement.
Oh, that's going to get them. Good call.
If he's been propositioned with coke, and if it would work,
get the hell out of my bar. I'm not doing this.
This is a setup, right?
It's terrible. I've seen gentlemen practice their fighting combos out in the parking lot in preparation for me, a series of karate chops and just pointing. But normally they just leave. So I just don't put up with it. Please leave the establishment. We don't want to.
No nonsense.
We don't want the red and blue showing up and making this a whole thing.
Would you call the cops if someone did this? Like this guy, this bouncer.
Take it with you. Get out of here. Don't come back to the bar. Don't let me see you here again.
Seems like you'd have to fill out paperwork and stuff. Like, yeah.
I'm already working till 2. I don't need. Come on.
So thanks, but no thanks. So I think I thought it was a magnanimous gesture. I'm kind of on the side of the guy. I mean, he's 20. He's just trying to get in the bar.
He's trying.
He mistakenly believes everyone wants some of his cocaine and
a little bump. Yep.
I don't know. Anyway, that's where we're at. All right. That's our show. We will be back next week. We'll figure out what happened with the lobbying of Congress and many other things that'll go on. And hopefully we have more national champions out there. Plus, we got the baseball super regional. So some ducking crap is going to go down. You know that. We know that. So continue to subscribe, leave us nice reviews, and we will talk to you later.